ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I'm supposed to speak about farms and related topics, but I'm not going to. I'll speak on in a manner that Srila Prabhupada indicated is the purpose of the farm project. In other words, live simply with the motive that in one time Srila Prabhupada said the most important thing is to save time for chanting Hare Krishna. So, hearing and chanting about Krishna. So I'm going to speak about Krishna, specifically his godly qualities, here godly in the sense of being God, his godness, his, we've heard of godlessness, and Krishna has his godnessness. So, the qualities by which he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead are revealed in his names. He has many names, unlimited names. Particularly there is the Vishnu Sahasranama, which I've been speaking on. So I'll continue to do that. At name 261. This is one of the more obscure names in the sense that it's not a name that you hear very often. And even the meaning of it is not immediately apparent. As the name, for instance, Krishna means all attractive. Gopal means the protector, maintainer of the cows. But this name, name 261, Vrishodara, means, Vrisha means bull, is the general meaning. There you go, farms, bull. And Udara means stomach. So bull stomach, what is the meaning of that? Well, most of the commentators in this series of names, this is the last in a series of names which begin with Vrisha. They take Vrisha to mean dharma. One meaning of Vrisha is dharma. Dharma is personified as the bull, as we learn in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, one who has dharma for his stomach or his mid-region. So, one of the commentators gives the understanding that because in the Varnashram dharma system, there you go, Varnashram, I'm not too much off topic. In the Varnashram system, everything culminates in yajna. And all the efforts of the everything that people do, their swakarma, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, the culmination of that, of the tangible fruit of their work, is offered into the fire in the form of grains and ghee. So he who accepts that, he who eats the grains and ghee through the medium of the fire, he accepts that as someone would take food into their stomach, may be understood as Vrishodara. So, as I said, it's not a very straightforward understanding. It's a another meaning is that everything emanates from his stomach. So, including those who observe dharma, beginning with Brahma. Another meaning is that he keeps all the beings inside his stomach. During the time of universal devastation, and then everything emanates again from his stomach. Now, another of the commentators, he translates Vrisha to mean fire, agni, so therefore he has fire in his stomach. He is the fire in the stomach. Aham vaishvanaro bhutva praninam deham ashrita. Pana pana samayukta pachamyanam chaturvidham, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, as the fire in the stomach, I digest all the different kinds of food which are taken in by living beings. So he should also have fire in his stomach. The universal form of the Lord is the all these different functions are attributed to that universal form. So he himself has fire in his stomach, and the commentators here note that there's fire in the stomach, there's fire in the center of the sun, there's fire in the center of the earth. Otherwise, how do we get volcanoes? Have you investigated that at all? What's in the center of the earth? That's another of those pseudo-scientific, or what they call pseudo-scientific ideas, that this the center of the earth is hollow or something like that. There's another, you know. There's, and then some devotees showed me that there are some karmis investigating this. The center of the earth is hollow, and then he said actually below the, if you go deep enough, there's the, you go down to another varsha. You going to go there, Maharaj? Down to the next varsha? Now, you're going up to the spiritual world, but in your investigations, you might go there. And then at the North Pole and South Pole, there's the entrance to the heavenly worlds. Isn't it? Meru? Could be. In the Bengali dictionary, the translation of the North Pole is Sumeru. Interesting. I don't. That's presumably derived from Sanskrit. I don't know. And the South Pole is called Dakshin Sumeru, South Sumeru. Anyway, this commentator says there's fire in the earth, which, at least from the volcanoes, we can understand. It's something hot is bubbling down there. So the next name. 262, Vardhana. Vardhana means to grow, literally means to grow. There's a city in Bengal called, oh, that's the next one, Vardhaman. So this is interpreted to mean not who grows, but he who causes to grow. There's transitive and intransitive verbs. So who causes to grow. Whatever grows is because of him. We learn in biology class, I don't know if it's still current biology, but probably is, that the plants grow because of the action of sunlight on chlorophyll, nourished by water. But as he oversees everything in the material world, maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetuna anena kaunteya jagadviparivartate, he oversees everything. How is everything growing? We can investigate and give scientific, what's called a scientific explanation. But why so? Why is that? What is the motivation behind it all? Jagat. Yo gacchati iti jagat. Jagat viparivartate. That gives the sense. Jagat means that which moves. So he who makes to move, there's another name previously. Who makes to move. I can't remember what the name was. So similarly, who causes to grow, or who nourishes all living beings. And whatever grows, he is the growing principle. He supplies the he makes it possible. And that's not true only of physical bodies, but someone's business, someone's reputation. Everything grows because of him. Then he is the source of prosperity. If there's any prosperity, he causes to grow. And he also causes to decline. Grasishnu Prabhavishnu cha. Grasishnu means literally he devours, he eats. And Prabhavishnu means he causes to come into being or causes to grow. We often hear, I don't know about in Sweden, but elsewhere, we hear that the mother, the female principle is to be the nurturer and the nourisher. I don't know if that counts in Scandinavia, where everything's all equal. No, they still make a distinction between men and women. Of any kind? Some kinds of. Yeah. Okay. Because I just told yesterday that with children, they legally they don't have any father or mother here. They have guardian number one and guardian number two. So, legally they don't have any parents. This parenthood is it's become legally defunct. Interesting country. Glad I wasn't born here. Nurturer and nourisher. So he who nourishes. So we see that the functions which are traditionally associated with males are very definitely in Krishna. And also the functions which are associated with females. Because he is Purnam. He is complete. In all respects. So, Parashara Bhatta, the Sri Vaishnav commentator, says that the previous name, he always links each name with each other, in the names that are adjacent to each other. He links them together. So the previous name, who has all living beings in his stomach, so just as he keeps the beings in his stomach, so like a mother keeps a child, she nourishes the child within, causes to grow. That's a nice explanation, isn't it? Just like the child is within the stomach and the mother is causing to grow. There's that one verse quoted in Bhagavad Gita as it is, that there are three ways that the different kinds of species cause their offspring to, or they protect their offspring. By seeing, by touching, and by meditating upon. So by touching the birds, they sit on the eggs. By seeing most animals, they just see the cows, look at their calves. Of course, they lick them also and feed them. And the turtles, they lay their eggs in the sand on the beach and then they just meditate on them. So similarly, the child in the womb grows by food supplied from the mother's body. But it's also by the meditation of the mother. She's all the time conscious of the child forming within her stomach, within her womb, and that meditation that is such that even prior to the birth of the child, there is a emotional bond which is maybe the strongest bond. Strongest emotional bond in the material world, that between mother and child. Actually, in Sanskrit, there are two words for birth. what we call birth, that is called Bhumista Janma. It means they come out to the world. But the first birth, and this will answer the question in the abortion debate, the first is Garbhastha, means becomes situated in the womb. In other words, as soon as the sperm enters the ovum or interacts with the ovum, that is called the first, that's actually birth. And therefore we see that although Hiranyaksha came from his mother's womb before Hiranyakashipu, or because of that, he was considered the younger brother. And you would think he should be the older brother. But Hiranyakashipu was older because the sperm of Kashyap had pierced the ovum of Diti prior to that which became... Yeah, the one which became Hiranyakashipu was formed within the womb before Hiranyaksha, and therefore he was further back in the womb and came out afterward. So it's getting a little tangential here. Now, another meaning given, that though he nourishes those who have resorted to him. This especially devotionally we can understand. But even those who approach him for material benefits, he nourishes them. He specific, of course, he nourishes all living beings. But he nourishes the body of all living beings, but he nourishes spiritually those who come to him, those who approach him. And even materially, those who approach him for material benefits, they are materially nourished. So he nourishes all living beings, but those who specifically approach him, he takes care of them, as he states in Bhagavad Gita. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriyaha. He is equal to all. He doesn't particularly favor anyone or disfavor anyone, but ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. But those who approach him in love, he takes special care of them. So he's equal to all. He nourishes all. He also destroys. But for those who approach him, he takes special care. An example of this is that of Sudama Vipra, who approached him in love at the behest of his wife. He approached Krishna with love, and all he had to offer him was a little raw chipped rice. But Krishna accepted that, and in return, he gave massive opulence, which Sudama Vipra wasn't particularly desirous of, his wife was. But even more, he nourished Sudama Vipra in bhakti. Ishvara shabhav bhakte naloy aparad, alpo sheva bahumane atta prajanto prasad. It's the characteristic of the Supreme Personality of God, it is very nature, that he doesn't take offenses which are caused, offenses made by his devotees, but if they do even a little service, he considers it very great and gives them mercy up to the level of giving his very self to them. In Gita also, patrang pushpang palanto yang yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti paharitam ashnami prayatat anaha. If we offer Krishna even some apparently very insignificant items, such as fruit, flower, leaf, or water, if it's offered with love, following the proper procedures for offering, that's there, prayatatmanah, then Krishna accepts it. So that you can say, coming back to the farm project, that the farm project offers the Krishna conscious farms offer the best way to serve Krishna, because Krishna likes leaf, flower, fruit and water, and Krishna is especially very fond of flowers more than jewels and gems. He likes flowers. So in the cities, however hard you try, you can't get a profuse supply. Well, unless you're extremely rich, and then you can buy a big garden in the middle of the city. But you can get a few flowers. You can grow in the city. But Krishna daily, you see, there's so many flowers on the altar. Krishna daily should be served with many, many flowers, fresh, fragrant. So that's the opportunity on the farm. Grow the flowers. That's the best flowers to offer to Krishna. Better than the most expensive ones you can buy in the shop are those that are grown with love for Krishna, with the specific purpose of growing them for Krishna's pleasure. And then offering them and making nice garlands for Krishna. And Krishna's very pleased with that. It used to be one generation ago in India, it's still we see, but it's diminished now, that early morning, just after sunrise, which comes pretty much the same time of the year, pretty much the same time of the day all around the year in India, because it's tropical, not, what's the word for Arctic or polar, it's not polar. Temperate. This is temperate. It's getting a bit. Technically speaking, it's temperate. Yeah. All right. Okay. So in here, there's a big fluctuation between the in the seasons. You have a very long days in the summer. Actually, there's no sunset in the summer in much of Sweden, right? The sun goes down, but it goes down in the sky, but it doesn't really. Yeah, yeah. I was in the Arctic Circle once in Russia in the summer. It never really gets, never gets dark actually. The sun doesn't set at all. Yeah. So. Yeah, so more or less the same time of day, people are up in the morning collecting flowers. They go around different trees and with sticks to special. They have special sticks for dislodging flowers and collecting them for doing puja. And then ding, 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 in the houses you will hear people there. So flowers are very important. And why are they important? Because Krishna likes them. So he causes the flowers to grow, and he causes the devotion of those who offer him flowers or anything to grow. He makes it grow. And even a little offering, he'll magnify that many, many times. That comes to another of his names, which is already discussed. Kritagya means he's a very grateful person. So little offering he'll make to grow. Good return on your investment. So instead of trying to grow our bodies and our wealth, that may also be there. We should maintain the body healthily and maintain families. But the prime effort should be in growing our devotion to Krishna. And by Krishna's grace, we can grow everything on the farm and offer it all to Krishna, and our bhakti will grow simultaneously. Actually, that's in English we say like that. I'm growing vegetables in this plot of land. But actually, that gives the idea, karta aham, I am the doer. But actually, we should restructure the English language to say that I am the servant in this cabbage patch. Krishna's growing the vegetables. That's there in Gita, isn't it? What's that verse? Pushnami choshati sarva somo bhutla rasatmakaha. I become the moon and I nourish the vegetables. So the next name, Vardhaman. Yeah, that's the name of a city in Bengal. He who himself grows. He grows. Now, one name here in Vishnu Sahasranama, and there are similar names, is Achala, he doesn't move. There are similar names. He is, Dhruva, he's fixed. So he doesn't change. That's one of his names. Several of his names indicates that he doesn't change, but this name means that he grows. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna, who is inconceivable. He possesses qualities that are seemingly contradictory, that would be contradictory in anyone else but him. He makes what seems to us impossible, possible. He doesn't change, but he grows. He causes others to grow. He himself is unchanging. Even though he is unchanging, in his pastimes, he is born, he grows. Now, how is that? Well, different explanations can be given. Now, one is that his growth is not like that of an ordinary living being of this world, that it is the growing occasioned by eating food and breathing air. He's not dependent on anyone for his growth. His body is completely transcendental. He grows by his own will, which means that he can go just as he was born, first showing a four-handed baby form. Then he assumes a two-handed baby form. And at will, he can change. In one sense, we can say his form is illusory. That's one of his names, Maya Manush. That's one of the names in Vishnu Sahasranama. An illusory man. He's not really a man, but although he is in the form of a baby, at any time he can just, according to his desire, please don't, could you sit with your legs crossed so you don't show your feet to the deities? Or you can sit on a chair if you're finding it difficult to sit on the floor. Would you like to sit on a chair? That would be better. So, according to his reciprocation with his devotees, he can change forms as he likes, from baby to four-handed form of Narayana. He can, he's not limited by his form. It's not that when he is a baby, he is, he has to wait to grow up. He can just grow up whenever he likes, or he can flip back and forward. Mother Yashoda always sees him as her baby. What does that mean? Well, Krishna, he grows, but he's eternally a baby. He's eternally supreme form, we can say, form as Kishore, the young, the youth. But the other forms, they're also eternal. So although he appears to grow, he's he's always a baby. He's always a youth. So he grows, but in another sense he doesn't grow because he's always a baby. He's always a... there are the different ages. Kumar, Kumar. Actually, the ages are called Kaumar, Poganda, Kaisha. So he's always in those forms. So in another way, he grows. His happiness grows. Even though he's unlimitedly happy, still his happiness grows. How can we make Krishna happy? He's completely happy, but he does become happy. When we offer him with love a flower, for instance, he becomes happy. That doesn't mean he lacked anything before we offered it to him, or that his happiness was not infinite and complete, but it increases. Infinity can increase. So there's a very easy way to demonstrate that mathematically, actually, that you can have one infinite set more than another infinite set. It's very easy. Anyway, just like, for instance, the numbers, one set of infinite numbers, 3, 6, 9, 12, go on to infinity. That's one infinite set of numbers. Put the numbers in between, 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8, make that an infinite set, and it's an infinite set of numbers with twice as big. It's twice infinity, twice as big. So infinity can, one infinity can be greater than another. At least that's accepted in mathematics. I guess it's discussable philosophically. Anyway, infinity is inconceivable to the finite mind. So Krishna keeps on growing. His bliss always grows, his majesty always grows, his love always grows, despite him being unlimited. He's always growing. Of course, one form of the Lord which we can specifically think of who grows is Vamana Dev. And there's also Varaha Dev. He comes out from the nostril of Brahma as a little pig and becomes a very big pig, big enough to pick up the whole earth. Also Matsya Avatar. He grows little helpless fish who takes shelter of Satyavrata Muni, but within a short time he becomes so big that Satyavrata Muni takes shelter of him in the water of devastation. So these are some specific forms of the Lord who grow. Also that the universe expands. That's accepted in the Vedic knowledge, which is in line with current predominant scientific speculations, that the universe grows. So the universe, he multiplies himself in the form of the universe. The word universe is there, that's translated as, that's the translation of the Sanskrit word jagat, but the Sanskrit understanding is that jagat comprises many brahmandas. So there's one universe and many universes. What we would call, anyway, it's a different understanding altogether. So, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. Any questions, comments? It's all Srimad Bhagavatam philosophy. Srimad Bhagavatam from another perspective. Yes, please. Does going back to Godhead refer to the four kinds of liberation? Yeah, basically. Those Going back to Godhead can also mean being Krishna conscious, even on this earth. Because we're with Krishna. We're with Krishna if we're here thinking of Krishna always. Yomam pashati sarvatra sarvam chamayi pashati tasyaham na pranashyami sachame na sachame nas. What is it? Sasaham na pranashyami sachame. I forgot it. Sachame nacha na pranashyati. That's it. Yeah, I was getting pashati also, like. And so it didn't make sense. Sachame na pranashyati. For one who sees me always, Krishna says, and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him and he is never lost to me. Similarly, we find in the ninth canto of Bhagavatam that sadhu bir hridayam tvaham. Sadhu nam hridayam tvaham. Adanyate na jananti naham te bhyomanagapi. Those who are sadhus, devotees, they know nothing but Krishna, and thus Krishna says, I know nothing but them, and therefore they are my heart and I am their heart. So we can be back to Godhead sitting in Sweden. One who lives in Krishna consciousness, he doesn't live in this world. He's called Jivan Mukta. He only appears to be in this world. That's why, just like we say, we say Srila Prabhupada was born in Calcutta in 1896. We say that, but we understand it's a conventional way of speaking. He's not an ordinary living being of this world. He's not an ordinary jiva who took birth due to previous karmic reactions. So that's why we say the appearance of a Vaishnava. We don't say the birth. So, anything else? Yes, please. Well, I only have is the center of the earth fire? I only have the English translation here, so I couldn't say exactly. But it may be that inside the earth is fire, and that is pretty apparent from volcanoes, at least in many points of the world. Fire comes out of the earth. It's close to the surface. Yeah, it's inside the earth, but close to the surface. There are many places, not in Sweden, in Iceland it's famous for volcanoes. Vesuvius in Napoli, Italy. There's so many. Indonesia, within the ocean. There is a term in Sanskrit for oceanic volcanoes. So that's just another indication that they did have knowledge of all these things.
The word Brisha is used for the bull. And to me, it's not clear whether the Sanskrit word that clearly delineates castrated bull.
There's no Sanskrit word for this particular word. That I'd have to see. But there should be. That would be Uksha, probably. Possibly. In Bengali, there's a word for a castrated word called Balad. And then the non-constrained will be called a shar. I don't know if that's from Sanskrit, though. Yes, please.
I've been reading your book. You wrote also a description of it, and
Glimpses of traditional Indian life, yeah. You like it? Good. Thank you.
Hmm.
I don't remember exactly that, yeah. Life in Bengal. Well, that's a whole... That was transformative. I mean, it was a very educational period of my life. Looking back on it, I didn't really realize at the time. Oh. Well, that's a big topic. Huge topic. Maybe I should give a whole lecture or seminar on... I should prepare and think about it a bit. There's so many things. I mean, a lot of the things are in the book. There. About, well, in the village, everyone has to live with each other for the rest of their life, and you have to interact with others, just like if you run out of oil, you have to borrow some from your neighbor, for instance, and then they'll give it back to you later. Maybe, maybe not, depends on the relationship. I mean, they may not, if it's just a little oil, they might not even bother. You just, so... You have to keep good relationships. In a bigger village, they may have some enmity also. That may also be there. It's not that everyone becomes a saint just by living in a village, but the fact that, especially when not only agriculture, but all or most functions require cooperation, then I don't think people make a calculated decision to keep good relationships, but you just have to. For building houses, which is quite a common thing in Bengal, because, well, in the rainy season especially, well, it can be a cyclone at any time of year, and then quite often there are floods, and then the houses which are built of mud, they collapse. And probably whatever it was built of, it would collapse. So then it requires, everyone has to help everyone else to rebuild their house, which if you get enough people together, you can build a house in a day. I mean, that's a house that will last until the next flood. Otherwise, you can put up a one-room grass hut in just a few hours, and including digging the not very deep foundations. If you have it, that's if you once you've got all the materials together. If you put up a few bamboo poles and then clad it with some grass, and then you can just in a few hours you can put up. But that won't last very long. Well, maybe last a couple of years if there are no floods. So for a cooperation for all things, for harvesting and sowing, and you need group, it requires group help. And the children, they're running in and out of all the different houses, and they know which is their parents' house, but it's not that anywhere is private, and people just walk in and out of each other's houses. There's no conception of privacy in the village. That's about the opposite of Swedish culture, isn't it? Privacy is like the main thing. So it's a very different culture. But yeah, it's a big topic. Maybe I should speak on that. I'm sorry, but I don't know. It's such a huge thing. What I learned in Bengal. Yeah, all right. I'll give it a go. Saturday morning. Yeah, but You know what? I don't like to give seminars on the same topic because, although it would be a good idea, but I like to speak on different things. So, yeah. If you get a lot of ghee, if you haven't got any ghee, then something's seriously wrong. If you don't have sufficient ghee, then there's something seriously wrong. And if we're living with cows, we should have plenty of ghee. Something seriously wrong means we're living in Kali Yuga, so everything's wrong. But there should be sufficient ghee. That's one symptom of Kali Yuga, that people are poverty stricken. They don't have sufficient ghee or anything else. They think if they have some tin can car, that they're opulent. But real opulence is, what is that? Gavayo dhanavan, dhanyavan dhanavan. One who has got cows and grains is considered wealthy. That's the meaning of the word dhanam. That's the basic meaning of the word dhanam, which means wealth. I mean, the basic meaning is to have cows and grains. So if you don't have much ghee, then do Sankirtan Yajna. Not only is it the yajna for Kali Yuga because people are incapable, but one reason is we don't get the ingredients. So there are several reasons. We do Sankirtan Yajna. Offer our life in the fire of Sankirtan. That's another reason for the farms, that you can perform Sankirtan. Yeah, let me take this question. Why don't we worship the cow every day? Well, there are different ways of worship. Cow is worshipped by caring for her, feeding her, stroking her. That's also a form of worship, which they appreciate more, actually. And usually when you try to offer some arati to the cows, they know what's going on. There is once a year the Gopuja that Krishna did, right? But in there it's mentioned also they were fed fresh grasses. The cows, they like more than anything food. They spend a lot of time eating. Give them gur. They like gur. What's the alternative for gur in Sweden? I guess you could make it here also from sugar beet, yeah. Mangel wurzels. Then, what was your question?
What if a man was born on an island?
What was that?
If a man was born on an island?
A man is born on an island
without cows.
Without cows.
Is it a punishment?
Is it a punishment? Yeah, that's one kind of punishment, to be born in a place where there are no cows or grain. Just like to be born in the desert, there are different kinds of deserts. That's considered, or that's understood to be due to some defect in a previous life, that one is born in a situation where there's no cows and no possibility for agriculture. Yeah? To be born in a climate in which and topography which is suitable for agriculture, that is better situation karmically than being born in a situation which is not very suitable, it's very difficult to live. So yeah. You're right. You had a question?
You often hear that Krishna, even when he was like 120 years old, he still was like 16 years old boy, but you don't hear much about his Shakti, talking about like gopis and his queens.
Krishna never looks old. What about his queens and his gopis? They also don't grow old looking. They don't have to go for facelifts. Yeah. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita bhistabhirya eva nija rupataya kalabihi. That's stated that his Krishna's transcendental pastimes he enjoys with his expansions who are of the same nature. They're expanded from his own form, of the same nature.
And then there are gopis who were in previous life.
Gopis who were previously munis and from the heavenly planets. There are about 20 different kinds, aren't there? The Yajna Sitas and the Dandakaranya Rishis, and then the girls of Ayodhya, not going, Janakpur, who saw Rama. So there's so many different kinds. Yeah, they're all, they all partake of that nature. There are not some gopis who remain young and the others who get old. It's all bliss. Some are coming from the platform of Jiva Tattva. Yeah. But there's no decay in spiritual existence. Hare Krishna. Whoop, another question. Still going on? You can grow on the roofs and in windowsills and in your house, but we're talking about huge gardens in which you can grow unlimited numbers of flowers that you need to get out of the city. If you flowers and vegetables, and especially grains, you can't produce sufficient grains in the city. I mean, a lot of people, I don't know about in Sweden, but a lot of people live in tiny little apartments or so you can't produce enough for everyone. You can. Urban gardening can produce quite a lot, but not all that's needed. And especially for worshipping Krishna, if there are profuse flowers, that's very pleasing to Krishna. Yeah, one more question, then we'll finish. What's the question?
Krishna loves several women.
Krishna loves several women. Krishna loves all women, but some more than others. Yeah.
How can from that image can born something that refuses women? Says that women are something that you don't have to.
Something like why?
Oh, Krishna loved so many women. Why do devotees, male devotees, avoid women or something like that? Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He enjoys a transcendental relationship with his lovers in the form of women. In this material world, we are imitating Krishna. We are trying to enjoy that which we are not meant to enjoy. So the motive that I shall enjoy is a perverse motive, and that is especially because we are meant to serve Krishna, be happy in service of Krishna. So the attraction between male and female in the material world binds us in the material world. That increases mundane lust, which is the opposite of spiritual love. Love between man and woman leading to Krishna? I can't understand. Anyone understand? Yeah, let's finish the class now and then afterward we can talk. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Panchatattva ki jai. Hare Krishna.